is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
I mean, those three middle-class kids I've trained in the last 6 months, and it's exactly the recipe that you and I are talking about. It's exactly the recipe I gave them. I said, here's what you got to do. And, you know, honest kids, I ask them, hey, have you done what I asked you to do? Nah, coach, I haven't. And, you know, they would make excuses, but at least they were honest. But I'm just like, man, you know, I've done exactly what you want to do as a player. I know what college coaches want. I was a college coach for 5 years. I work out a lot of college players that college coaches send me. I've been with world champions. I've trained, I've been on the court and been with the best of the best. And I'm telling you exactly what to do, and you still don't do it. It just goes to show their love is not authentic. They like basketball, but they don't love it. They're interested, but they're not committed. They're passive and not passionate. I mean, it's nothing. The good kids, they'll probably be, you know, productive in society, honor roll students. But, you know, you got to be a different beast, man. You got to have a different chip in you if you want to play at any high level in any sport. And Division I basketball is no joke. It's a game of toughness and grit, especially if you're not athletic. And it's just sad. But, hey, you don't let it affect your confidence as a coach. You know, there's somebody that's going to listen.
Gannon Baker is regarded as one of the premier basketball skills trainers in the world. Gannon trains players from the NBA, NCAA, high school, and middle school levels. His relentless passion, work ethic, and competency for the game has the respect of players and coaches all over the world. Since 2001, Baker has been traveling all over the globe, impacting the game of basketball. He has been to 45 countries and counting, working with players and coaches on their game. NBA and WNBA players crave his knowledge and energy for getting them better. Gannon has worked with and shared the court with Kobe Bryant, LeBron James, Chris Paul, Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, Brittany Griner, Maya Moore, Lindsey Whalen, Tamika Catchings, Skylar Diggins, and many more. College coaches constantly connect with him about working out their players during the offseason, as well as his basketball wisdom. Nike and Brand Jordan hire Gannon year after year to work with their high school and top European players. His schedule is constantly filled with coaching clinic events such as the NCAA Men's Final Four, Coaching U Live, Nike USA clinics, FIBA clinics, AAU clinics, and high school association clinics. Most recently, Gannon has opened a Gannon Baker Basketball Asia office, where he has partnered with Stronger Me, a basketball education company based in Beijing, China. Together, they have committed to educating coaches, trainers, and players in the emerging Chinese basketball market based on the brand new systematic curriculum created to satisfy the needs of players, coaches, and parents for every level of play, starting at ground zero and guiding them along to the hopefully professional ranks. When you're done listening to this episode, make sure you jump over to Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen and leave the show a 5-star rating and review. When you do, we'll enter your name in a drawing for an official Hoopheads Podcast t-shirt. You're going to love this conversation as Gannon and I talk about player development and what it takes to be great in the game of basketball. Make sure you take some notes as you listen to this episode with one of the premier basketball skills trainers in the world, Gannon Baker.
Hello, and welcome to the Hoopheads Podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here as your host. And today, I'm pleased to welcome to the podcast Gannon Baker. Gannon, welcome.
Hey, Mike, glad to be here, man. I've always considered myself a hoophead, but now I'm with the official, authentic Hoopheads. So
yeah, now you can be an official Hoophead. So welcome to the welcome to Hoopheads Nation.
All right, man.
All right, so I want to dig right in to your background as a basketball player and what made you fall in love with the game when you were young.
Yeah, you know, it's always good to have nostalgic thoughts, because when things get tough, you kind of refer back on why you fell in love with what you're doing anyway. And it was because my dad, man. My dad, Arnold Baker from Hampton, Virginia, was a high school coach at Phoebus High School. Actually coached the legendary Boo Williams, if you're familiar with his AAU program.
Absolutely.
So coached him and you know, just grew up in the gym watching them practice. And my dad played at Randolph-Macon, which is right now a Division III school in Richmond, but at the time it was Division II. So he's a Division II scholarship player and still played till well over his 40s. And I'd watch him and just kind of through osmosis and being in an environment of hoops, you know, started to play the game. My grandfather was was on the only undefeated University of Richmond basketball team. So he played ball and he put up a hoop in our backyard, and they lived right across the street from me. So when I wasn't hooping with my dad, I was, you know, rebounding, passing. So, you know, fell in love with the game then and played at Hampton High School, ended up winning the state championship, and really fell in love with winning because we might have had a 90% winning percentage my 3 years of varsity at Hampton High School. And from there, you know, never lost the love.
So I know it was a little bit, your situation when you were growing up is probably similar. You and I are of a similar age. So how would you describe the difference in the way you grew up playing the game in terms of, you know, the summer and the, you know, now you have the AAU circuit and kids are playing primarily with kids their own age and in a gym and,
yeah,
you know, with coaches versus the way I'm sure you grew up in a similar way that I did, which is, you know, you were, yeah, on the playground, you were scouting around for pickup games. How would you compare the two systems and, you know, just talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, well, both cultures of grassroots basketballs, back when I played and you played and today, are good. You know, there was good and bad in both eras. But it is a fact that the kids nowadays, because of the culture that they grew up in, are more sensitive, less likely to fight, less likely to find solutions on their own, less creative. Because, you know, when I grew up, we had, whether I was poor or there wasn't a lot of stuff to do, I don't know, but I just remember us having a TV with antennas and there was only three channels. So
I remember that well.
Know, yeah, by process of elimination, there was nothing else to do but go outside. And so basketball is an easy sport to pick up. Anybody, you don't have to have a lot of money to do it. So I spent days in my backyard, in the driveway, working on ball handling, you know, going to basketball camps during the summer, where nowadays, you know, there's tons more basketball camps, but less kids at these camps because there's more tournaments and kids enjoy playing and competing, if you want to call it competing at times. Whereas you and me, we'd play a lot on our own. And then when we got that competing bug, we wanted to test our notes. We wanted to have a little show and tell, if you will, you know, see if you got game. There was a place called the Hampton Roads Boys Club on Kickitan Road. And then there was an outdoor kind of boys club called Shell Road. And so my dad dropped me off one day when I was 11 because I told him, look, I really want to become a great basketball player. I want to go Division One. I want to, you know, try to play in the NBA one day. And he's like, look, man, you're short. And, you know, he wasn't racist at all, but he said, look, you know, white guys, just wasn't a lot of white guys playing high level basketball. Are you ready to jump into that environment? And I was like, you know, what's white got to do with it, Pop? You know,
right.
And,
yep.
And I might've even said white men can play or something. And he was like, all right, well, that's a good attitude, son. Success is colorblind and gender free. I never forgot that. So he was testing me and wanted to, you know, make me realize that, you know, being short and Caucasian and a predominantly African-American sport, in the sense of you want to play high level, you got to just, you know, break your own racial barriers. So if you're an athlete, you kind of know how race plays into it, whether you're white or black. Race does play into life. And it's just something you have to deal with. You don't have to tiptoe around it. It's one of the things that I learned through basketball is diversity. So I ended up walking into the gym. I was only salt and a pepper shaker, man, only white guy. And, you know, it was like the scene in Rocky III when Apollo took him to his old gym and it was nothing but, you know, tremendous athletes in there, and everything stopped when Rocky walked through and they were looking at like, man, who's this guy? Is he lost? And that's kind of, that's kind of how I learned my toughness, my swag, my grit. And, you know, to make a long story short, I ended up winning the state championship almost twice. It was all state my senior year, 31 Division I scholarships. Had a chance to start at Duquesne and the Atlantic 10, which back then was kind of like the Big East, you know, Rutgers, West Virginia, Penn State at the time. And ended up playing professionally in Iceland, had to try out with the Denver Nuggets. So I ended up having a good career. And I owe it all to my dad dropping me off in an environment where I had to earn respect on my own. I had to gain recognition on my own. I had to work to get a spot for the next game. I had to fight through uncomfortableness. I had to fight through adversity because the first couple weeks they took my ball. They didn't let me play. They called me everything from cracker to white bread to you slow. You can't go play tennis. Go play the white boy sports. Like, I heard it all.
Yep.
And I was like, nah, man, I'm going to play ball. And then so after, you know, after a good 2 to 3 years, the same guys that ridiculed me, I found out were my teammates in the future at Hampton High. And then, you know, through battling adversity, some of these guys that ridiculed me and made fun of me and even bullied me a little bit became some of my best friends. And most of them came to my wedding. So it was a great lesson of, you know, you got to fight for your vision at first, but at the end, when you have success, your vision fights for you. And I've used that lesson my whole life, you know, in my marriage and my business, through adversity in my life. Eventually, you know, kids learn that, but they could learn that at an early age if they would have a game plan, like, you know, having the self-discipline to work on their game, having the self-discipline to put themselves in an environment where they're the only guy in the gym, most different guy in the gym, you know, freshmen, sophomores in high school, go to a college and play pickup game. Girls, you know, go play with guys. You know, dudes that live in a middle-class neighborhood like me, go to the hood and play ball or play a game. You know, put yourself in a situation where metaphorically you have to fight for everything in an AAU game that's given to you. Well, in street ball and playing in the hood, if there's a fight, there's nobody there to wipe your nose. There's nobody there to pick you up and wipe the blood off your scraped knees. The elite athletes nowadays, you know, they have that, the Zion Williams and so forth. But, you know, the underdog, the athlete that doesn't look like a superstar, that's not blessed with superstar skills, they would benefit more by developing their game on their own, going to clinics, going to camps, and then, you know, finding pickup games or some kind of game where they things aren't given to them and it's not easy. And that's the biggest lesson. Travel ball championship, which, you know, usually in championship travel ball, you'll have some, you know, some good reps, some good run environment situations where you can get better. But it's still not as good as playing in a summer league at a camp like the old five-star where you had a counselor league and you had to call your own fouls and even going to a pickup game, you know, on a college campus or at a boys club or, you know, in the hood outside where you got 20 guys waiting to play next and the score is 9-9 and you know you're going to get fouled if you get close to the defense and the wind is blowing and you're the only white guy on the court trying to, you know, play with these tremendous athletes. Like, I mean, you can't draw that up in a workout environment. You can't show a kid that on film. You know, they got to experience that. People follow your, you know, examples and actions more so than what they read or hear. And they just got to get out there and earn their sweat, so to speak. And that's the difference now in the environment because you never see kids. I go to gyms all over the world and get a workout in on off days or before my event. And I never, ever, and whoever's listening to this, please, you know, message me if you're the guy, but I never see a girl or a guy at a basket working on their game at game speed. I see guys and girls every now and then at a basket, but they're not working on their game. You know what I mean? Like I've seen Skylar Diggins in high school. Like I've seen Maya Moore in high school. Like you probably were in high school. Like I was, like, just getting after it by themselves in the gym. And then the other thing you don't see is guys playing one-on-one hard. Like, there was a guy named Kevin Swan, Pete Baycoat, Paul Blackman. You know, we would play one-on-one full court in middle school, unair-conditioned gyms. We'd play one-on-one half court. We'd play one-on-one with the dribble. We got to score in 5 seconds. One-on-one without the dribble. You know, you get two dribbles. I mean, it's just amazing how, you know, that is what it takes for the underdog to make it to a high level, and yet they continue to fall into what's popular, and that's go to ranking camps, go to, you know, tournaments with scouts, play travel ball, play 18 games in 2 weeks. So
yeah, I agree with you. It's crazy. I mean, just hearing everything that you've just said could mimic my entire childhood as a kid of what, you know, of what I did to try to become the player that I became. And, you know, you started talking about one-on-one full court, and I've told this story before, but at the courts here by where I grew up, we obviously it was behind the library. So we'd go to the courts that were behind the library, and I would be up there in the summertime, you know, middle of the day, working on my game, shooting, and the sun's beating down. And one day, a guy who I had watched in high school grew up close to me, and he ended up playing a couple years in the NBA. And then he also played overseas and went to the University of Wisconsin by the name of Scott Roth. And mm-hmm. Scott was about 7 or 8 years older than me. And one day he pulls up in his car. I'm like a 13-year-old kid just out there on the, you know, on the courts by myself working on my game. And Scott pulls up in his car and says, "Hey, I'm looking for somebody to play one-on-one full court with me. You know, would you be interested?" You know, and I'm looking at him like, this is a guy that, you know, I looked up to when I was younger.
Yeah.
And, you know, I took that opportunity, you know, and here I am playing against a guy who's, you know, at that time he was, I think he was playing in Turkey at the time when I first met him. And, you know, here I am, a 13-year-old kid getting an opportunity to work on my game against a professional basketball player. You know, how thrilling was that? And yet I look at that opportunity that I had, and, you know, to your point, kids today just don't have or just don't take advantage of those same opportunities. And you don't see them, you know, you see lots of kids shooting around at a basket, but you see very few kids that are purposeful in what they're doing and working at the kind of pace that it takes to really, you know, to really improve their game.
Yeah. And, you know, as teachers, as coaches, as leaders, you still have to voice that message. You still have to, you know, even though the percentages of them actually doing it are very, very low, you still got to, you know, teach the lesson. You still got to put it in your curriculum and emphasize to it, hold them accountable. I mean, those three middle-class kids I've trained in the last 6 months, and it's exactly the recipe that you and I are talking about. It's exactly the recipe I gave them. I said, here's what you got to do. And, you know, honest kids, I ask them, "Hey, have you done what I asked you to do?" "Nah, coach, I haven't." And, you know, they would make excuses, but at least they were honest. But I'm just like, man, you know, I've done exactly what you want to do as a player. I know what college coaches want. I was a college coach for 5 years. I work out a lot of college players that college coaches send me. I've been with world champions. I've trained, I've been on the court and been with the best of the best. And I'm telling you exactly what to do, and you still don't do it. It just goes to show their love is not authentic. They like basketball, but they don't love it. They're interested, but they're not committed. They're passive and not passionate. I mean, it's nothing. The good kids, they'll probably be, you know, productive in society, honor roll students. But, you know, you gotta be a different beast, man. You gotta have a different chip in you if you want to play at any high level in any sport. And Division I basketball is no joke. It's a game of toughness and grit, especially if you're not athletic. And it's just sad. But hey, you don't let it affect your confidence as a coach. You know, there's somebody that's going to listen. You know, yeah. You just got to keep teaching it.
I agree. And I think if you know what the right thing is to teach and you know the right message to send, which obviously you do, then you just, to your point, you keep plugging away at making sure that your message, you know, gets to kids. And, you know, yeah, maybe it only impacts and only one out of 50 or one out of 100 kids takes that advice to, you know, the 100% level of commitment. But then those kids are going to be the ones that, you know, that have success. And I know, I'm sure this is the same way for you, but I look at, you know, my experience in the game and growing up, and, you know, basically most of the people that I was around, whether it was high school, college, you know, didn't have the same level of drive and commitment that I had. And, you know, my experience was very similar to you in that, you know, as a white kid who wasn't super athletic, I mean, I'm 6'3", never have dunked in my life. And so it wasn't like I was relying on my athleticism to get me around places. So when I went to gyms and played, and I was, you know, probably the least talented athlete, if you define athlete by running and jumping, in a lot of the settings that I was in. And yet, you know, my passion and what I did to get myself prepared. And I just, you know, I just loved the game, and, you know, I didn't like it, to your point. I loved it. And that's really, I think, what separates, you know, the best players from ones who end up being average. And I think it's something that a lot of times, especially in today's youth basketball setting, I think parents have this idea that when they hire a trainer, when they play in all these AAU tournaments, when they do all this stuff, that that's what's going to transform their kid into being a, you know, whatever, a high school varsity starter or a Division III college player or, you know, a Division I player. And I think they just don't understand what you just talked about, which is the commitment, the passion, the desire that it takes in order to be able to get to that level, you know, no matter what your physical tools are.
Yeah, 100%. And it just takes the coaches out there, especially the trainers like us that run their own businesses, to educate the coaches and educate the, well, more so the parents, you know, educate them on, you know, what they need and how much they need. And, you know, unfortunately, a lot of these trainers out there, there's good ones and bad ones. And the mediocre ones I've seen don't really tell the truth and don't really educate everything they need to know, everything these parents need to know. Like I always tell parents, look, after about a week or two, you don't need me. You really don't need me. And that's not out of error. I mean, that's just out of secure, you know, that's just the truth. I mean, you know, if you need me all the time, then you're playing with a crutch. I'm a doctor. You don't need a doctor all the time. You just need a doctor to tell you what's wrong and right and maybe get some consulting. But if you need a friend, you know, if you need a robot, somebody to always be there for you, then you're really not going to make it anyway. You got to be mature, you know, in your development. And a lot of these trainers don't preach that message, man. They're insecure and they don't tell them the truth. And it's not about, I mean, drills is about 30% of it. You know, you got the physical condition and you got the film, you have the competition part, and then you got your team system. So, you know, we're just a small piece, man. And if you go on social media, you would think our industry is the next coming of Jesus Christ. You know,
I mean, yeah, it's really, I agree. It's become
narcissistic, egocentric. I'm just embarrassed of most of the guys out there, how they portray themselves on social media. And I'm like, man, I hope I wasn't a part of creating all this, because I was one of the first ones to do it in 2000. And I'm sure there was one or two other guys out there doing it, but there was no social media. And now it's like, man, we're just a small piece, and we're teaching these kids skills so that they can go fit in to a team system. And probably the two most important things we need to teach kids is, one, how to be a great teammate, and two, how to compete to win. Like, that is never, you know, in live settings, I always make sure we talk more about that than the actual skills itself, because basketball is a team sport. It's not tennis or golf.
Yeah, I agree with you. Let me ask you this, Gannon. Here's a question that I've thrown out at a couple of high school coaches. I'm curious to get your opinion. I think that if you look at players, let's say players 6 through 12 on a high school roster today, and you look at players 6 through 12 on a high school roster when you and I were in high school, I think players 6 through 12 today are more skilled. And by skilled, I mean they can handle the ball better, they can shoot the ball better, but I don't think they're better basketball players in that they don't understand how to play the game. And I know that some of the high school coaches that we've talked to have said, made the comment that it sometimes makes it more difficult to explain to a kid who's the 12th man why he's not playing, because that kid does have skill, and the parent looks at him and go, man, my kid can shoot it, my kid can handle the ball, and yet the kid really doesn't understand, to your point, how to play in a team concept. And so therefore all those skills that they've developed don't translate into production on the basketball floor. Do you see that in some of the, you know, some of the situations that you've been in?
Yeah, the dynamics of, you know, 6 through 12 players back in the early, you know, late 80s, early 90s, and now totally different. The skill level nowadays is off the charts, because kids do go out there and dribble the ball. It's fun to do. It's entertainment. They see something on TV or Instagram, YouTube, and they go out and practice it millions of times, which is great. That's a start. They've shown that discipline, that work ethic for, you know, dribbling or a move. Steph Curry has done a lot for the love of the game with young people. Man, that's great. You know, Dame Lillard shooting from the logo during the All-Star game. That's awesome. That's awesome. Kids will start going out and doing that. And I say bravo. But then, you know, if your goal is to compete and win and play at a high level, then you got to add more to your toolbox. You know, you got to sacrifice. You got to get frustrated and fight through it. You have to have a lifestyle for a year of sacrifice and discipline and drive. And, you know, that's true. They don't have that. They don't, you know, they're soft. They don't know how to fight. I mean, we had players 6 through 12 never transfer, and they never played. They were just happy to be on the team, and they were like, I'm going to show you I'm going to play, and I'm not transferring because I'm going to stay and try to earn my spot. But there was, you know, they were more resilient that way. You know, they didn't even think about transferring. They were great teammates. They were – and then at practice, shoot, our 12th man would fight you, man. I mean
– Yeah, yeah.
You know, I remember his name was Giovanni Freeman, 6'4", you know, no skill at all. But, man, he'll fight you, rebound, push you. If you talk junk to him, he'll compete. He played like we never had problem of high school kids playing hard. We never did. I mean, we were a state championship team. We beat Grand Hills team in 89, 90. We were runner up. We lost the last game in the state tournament again by 3. But we were a good team. But we never had guys not playing hard. And nowadays, it's, you know, I worked out a very good team in Sarasota a couple months ago in Florida. And I mean, and I am who I am. I mean, I'm a professional. I come in and their motor wasn't up. I was like, are you kidding me? So the whole hour and a half was just about getting them to have some drive and to get
some energy.
Motor
yeah.
Up.
Yeah.
And one of the cats, amazing. Yeah, one of the cats played in the EYBL and had some dunk, and through his dunk, he had like 500,000 Instagram followers, and he was the worst. His motor was the worst in the gym, and
yeah,
and it's like, you know,
isn't that sad? Like, that to me is one of the things that, you know, it's just as a coach, as a trainer, just as a former player, when you see guys that have physical tools that don't have that motor and that drive, that drives me nuts.
Yeah, man, and it's not LeBron's fault, because LeBron was just acting as a fan, and he gave this kid props and, oh, great dunk, great finish. And, you know, he let that one shining moment go to his head instead of having more 5:30 a.m. moments, if you will,
yeah.
You know, just
right. Yep.
And so, you know, kids nowadays, it's hard for them to go hard, you know, and as Jay Billis said, and I love him, by the way. I've had a chance to work with him for many years. Always speaks the truth. He said, you know, hard work is a skill.
Registration is now open at www.headstartbasketball.com for this summer's Head Start Basketball Camps. We'll be hosting camps this summer in Strongsville, Westlake, Avon Lake, Oberlin, Brunswick, Highland Heights, Mentor, and Hudson. At Head Start Basketball, we care deeply about making a positive impact on the lives of young basketball players, both on and off the court. It's through building strong relationships with our players, parents, and coaching staff that we are able to use the game of basketball to enrich the lives of those we interact with, both inside and outside of our organization. We believe that our attention to detail, our growth mindset, and our commitment to lifelong learning allows us to help our players achieve their fullest potential. We are passionately committed to providing players, parents, and coaches with everything they need to reach their goals. These core values run through everything we do. Check out our website, www.headstartbasketball.com, and discover why you should attend a Head Start Basketball Camp this summer. Hope to see you there. We know hard work is important to winning and losing, so let me ask you this question. If you had to describe yourself as loving to win or hating to lose, which one do you think better describes you?
I hate to lose, but I love to win. But I mean, I don't, you know, winning is what I'd rather win than lose. I mean, winning to me is a lot better than losing, you know. So I don't really understand the question when people say, you know, I want to win. So when I don't win, I'm pissed. I mean, I would say it's the same. You know, my negative emotion of losing, right, is, and again, I want to say Kobe was asked that and he had the same answer, but that's not why I'm saying it. I remember getting that question asked me when I played. Well, I mean, I don't understand. When I lose, I'm real mad, and when I win, I'm real happy. And when I lose, I want to play again, right? And
yep.
that motivates me the next day, because I don't like the feeling of losing. And so when, you know, I lost a girlfriend, that doesn't feel good. So the next girlfriend I have, I'm going to be a better man. I don't like being broke. I don't like the feeling. So I'm going to do whatever it takes not to be broke. I don't like nobody, you know, adversity and mistakes are an education. And that's the best way to learn, no question. But I'm not going to lose on purpose just to learn. I mean, my goal is to go out and be as perfect as I can, and because losing and making mistakes don't feel good.
Yeah, absolutely. You know?
And now feelings sometimes are liars. I get that. Just because it don't feel good doesn't mean it's not going to help you. I get that. But I'm being real, you know, that I'm not in a good mood when I'm making mistakes and I'm losing money and I'm not good at coaching and I didn't have a good day at work and my wife is mad at me and my, you know, I said the wrong thing to my kids and I lost, you know, the championship. Well, it doesn't, you know, both to me, they're the same. Winning brings an unbelievable high and losing brings an unbelievable frustration, pissed offness, attitude of, man, this sucks. So, yeah. You know, that's my answer.
I got you. So I look at it from my standpoint, and I guess when I answer that, I usually answer that I hate to lose. And my reason for that is I think if you're somebody who's successful all the time, you know, or tend to be more successful, then you tend to remember those losses more. And those are the ones that gnaw you. And so if I think back to like my playing career, the games that I remember more are the ones that I lost. Those are the ones that stick with me, even more than the wins. Let's go step back a little bit and talk about you getting into coaching. And how did you always know, like as you were playing, did you know that you wanted to coach, or was it something that slowly developed over time as you looked at, hey, I know I want to be involved in the game, I know I want to have an impact? Did you always know from a younger age that you wanted to be a coach, or is that something that happened later on?
Yeah, I always knew I wanted to coach. You know, I always wanted to either be a high school coach or a college coach. And, you know, so I prepared in high school and college for that. I got a master's, you know, degree for that. And then I got into college. In 96, I was at Hampton University. We were Division I. 1997, I was in Belmont Abbey, Division II. And 98 to 2000, I was in Coastal Carolina, Division I. And during those 5 years, man, I just didn't get a lot of basketball. Great job. It wasn't boring, but it was just not enough basketball. And so, you know, 2000, I ended up having the visions of start my own training business. But that got put on hold because I was taking three of my players at Coastal to a European kind of tryout camp. And I ended up playing just for fun, and they needed a couple guys at the trial camp. And after the weekend, I got three offers, Iceland, Ireland, and Switzerland.
Nice.
And I took Iceland because I could make the most money, and they were going to give me a chance to do some basketball training. And so I did and played and did well. And the following summer, I sent my tapes to the Denver Nuggets, and they were having like a unique open tryout, invited top, you know, 250 videos they got. Mine was picked. I went out there, ended up getting an invitation to the rookie camp, man. So I'm next to Chris Anderson and Carmelo Anthony and Charlie Bell, played at Michigan State. Reuben Douglas, big time scorer at New Mexico. I mean, I was right there. Then I had a chance with Jeff Blitzelic and Scott Brooks, who's now with the Wizards, and Chip England, who's with Spurs, Adrian Dantley, you know, right there, man, trying to earn a spot for summer league. Ended up getting cut. They said I wasn't good enough to be put on injured reserve. I shattered my knuckle seventh day of camp. Made it through a cut, though. And, you know, said I wasn't good enough to play in the NBA. But, man, you got charisma. You got some flair to you. You know, why don't you go into coaching? I said, well, I just started my own business, training players. That's what I'm going to do. And they said, well, just stay on for a couple more days. You can help us with training camp with one hand and maybe take some notes and you can learn something. And, man, that's when I committed to my training business. And after 19 years, you know, here we are.
So that seems like a no-brainer now, because obviously, you know, there's lots of guys that have hung out their shingle. But back at the time when you started, the training business really didn't exist. So what made you think at that time that you could make a go of that and make a living, you know, doing that? Because obviously you could have continued to coach in college if that's what you had wanted to do after you got done playing.
Yeah.
So what made you think that, man, I think this training business is going to be something? What made you think that that could be a success, or that the direction was that basketball was headed?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I didn't know. I didn't know it would go, but that's what faith is. And I'm a believer, and I believe in God. I believe Jesus gave me a gift, and through the power of the purpose-driven life, you know, Rick Warren wrote an incredible book.
Great book.
Called The Purpose. Yeah, so everybody's given gifts. Whether you're a good person or a bad person, you're born with a gift. And that's why they call it a gift. God can't take it away. And so I thought my gift was basketball. And so I thought my purpose was to do this. And then at the time, in 2000, 2001, I did see myself teaching others how to do this. And, you know, kind of becoming a pioneer. And so my vision was true, and now I'm doing it in China. And, you know, now I'm trying to really become a better businessman out of it, because I've got my teeth in basketball. And I got a good partner. His name is Mihai Raducanu, and he's got some guys helping him. I have a team of four helping me, and they run my business, and I pay them, and they're doing a great job. They're full-time for me. And so I'm investing now back in my business to see if there's a way I can scale it, opportunities in China now. And, you know, we'll take a risk and see if there's a way to scale it and leave a legacy, if you will, because it is real, and you can do this for a living, not only in basketball, but in any sport. And, you know, in any profession, if you have passion, you know, turn it into paychecks. So that's real, and the only way I could have done that for me is having a relationship with God, because you got to have faith. I mean, life, you know, even doing something you love and living on the beach and having three kids and marrying the girl of your dreams, you still got issues. You still got problems.
Yeah.
Life is hard, and without, you know, faith and without a higher power, without a coach, without a great playbook, which for me is the Bible and really spiritual books. Without all that, man, you're going to lose. You're going to be lost. You're going to have serious issues. And the biggest thing that I can tell when I coach coaches, I say, man, have the three P's, man. Passion, peace, and persistence. Passion gets you up in the morning. Peace gives you a purpose with it, and persistence when you start messing up. And if you can have those three, man, in any profession, you'll see it through. And I think that'll allow God to build a legacy through you and through what you do.
So to that point, what's been your biggest challenge over the course of the last 19 years in your business? What's been the thing that has given you the most difficulty over time that you've had to use those three P's to get through?
Well, I would say the biggest thing for me is trying to scale what I do, trying to really build a positive team so that we can really do something in the corporate world. I mean, I had a guy named Michael Lancaster work for me for 4 years, and we just couldn't come to an agreement, and so he's doing a good job on his own. Tyler Ralph with Driven One Training. I mean, I had Drew Hanlon asked me to mentor him early on in his career when he was in college, and I didn't have time for him. I'm connected to almost all the great skill coaches out there that are doing well, and I didn't take the time to try to build a connection to where it's not 100, 200, 300 guys running the skill business. We're a team. And we're a unit like a USA Basketball, like a FIBA, you know, and I'd still love to figure out how, you know, all of us that are good at what we do, you know, to form a team and an entity so that we can have some power, because you know, anybody's a you know, you're a force by yourself. You're powerful by yourself. But if you have a team, man, there's a movement. And so I have that in China, man. I have a Chinese partner. We have about 50 employees. You know, we go 50-50 in it. And Stefan Marbury is one of our coaches. So we, you know, we train all his coaches, and we help him run all his camps. And that's a good team, you know. And I wish I had that. That's been my biggest 3P kind of thing through my 19 years, almost two decades doing this, is that, you know, I'd like to see me join some of these guys somehow. I mean, you know, it might happen. It might not be the industry for it, but, you know, there's got to be a way we can form an entity to where now we can make an impact with the NCAA, which has a lot of developmental issues, the NBA, which, quite frankly, they're not really interested in development. But if they had guys like us that do it for a living and are passionate, and not ex-players doing it because they need something to do, I think we can. No, I'm serious. Like them.
No, I know. No, I agree.
You know, I love them. Yep. I love them. And if they listen to this, so be it. I mean, it's all smoke and mirrors and PR. They want to develop, but nobody wants to do it at the level that we do it, because we do it for a living. They get a pension. That, you know, money makes them comfortable. They're not going to put their heart and soul into working guys out. I'll say D. Brown does. I'll say D. Brown does, because he's a good friend of mine, and he started out training on the grassroots level. I'm sure there's a few others, but he just comes to mind that whether he's training the Clippers or he's training a 9-year-old down in Port St. Lucie, Florida, he's going to get after it. And he ran an academy not because he needed the money, but because he loved developing kids. He just has a chip in his heart for development. So you need more guys like that that can make a difference in some of these entities that AAU basketball, you know, high school association, is like this. Everybody talks about the problems, but the solutions are right in front of everybody. We just need to come together as an industry and say, here it is. And we need to present it in a way that it's a no-brainer. You know, that might take, you know, a century, but, you know.
So let me ask you this. So if we talk solutions, if you could start the training / coaching business from scratch and just design what the ideal organization would look like, in your mind, what would that hierarchy, or what would that organizational flow chart look like? Because I think that's what, you know, that's an interesting way of looking at it, is how could we, because what I hear you saying is you want to be able to have an impact on a greater scale, to be able to touch more coaches, more players, more kids, and have an impact on them in basketball and in life. And I think that that's something that, if you're passionate about the game, and that's one of the things with this podcast that, you know, that I've tried to do, is to gain a platform where it's not just the kids I see every day. It's a greater way to be able to reach more people. And so if you had to think about what that would look like in your mind, what do you see?
Yeah, I mean, I don't need to reach any more people. I don't have enough time in my day. But I do want to be a small part of a big thing. So, you know, whatever my job will be, I'd love to do it and be a part of it. But, I mean, obviously, you got to have like a president. You got to have a business guy. You know, you need an objective guy to handle all the egos out there of the teachers and the superstars that are doing your coaching. So you got to have a mediator, a lawyer, a broker. You got to have a business guy to run the business, and then all the business infrastructure, which takes money. You know, nobody really makes a lot of money in this training industry. I've been able to make well over six figures because I got lucky and I was gifted and anointed and I hopped in at the right time. But, you know, there's no money in training. There's money in tournaments. There's money in entertainment. You know, there's not a lot of money in, you know, I mean, people think you're making, I mean, people don't get paid to train LeBron James. You train LeBron and Kobe and all them guys for free.
Right.
And, you know,
right.
And if you do get what an NBA guy pays me in an hour, I mean, I'm making like a minute doing something else. You know, it's just,
right, for sure.
It's not about the money. So,
yeah.
And kids won't work hard for free. and you're asking them 50, 60, 100 bucks to train, and you're going to give them the truth, they don't want to work hard for free. So you got to have a business infrastructure. Second, you got to have a curriculum that everybody agrees with, that everybody will stick to. It's not that hard because basketball's development is pretty black and white. And then you got to have enough good coaches in the major cities where, say, USA Basketball wants you or NBA. But you got to have enough good coaches that are responsible and consistent you can count on so that these particular players can, let's say, drive an hour from their home and get real training. And everybody's teaching, you know, off the same curriculum. So, and trust. I mean, you know, everybody has their own brand. It's no different than building an NBA team or building a high school team. Or, you know, you got to have those intangibles. But that'd be the main thing, a business infrastructure and then a curriculum and then competent, trustful guys.
So how do you get that? How do you train coaches? Because I know that's one of the things that you do is you certify coaches. So describe for me what that process looks like from your end of it and what you're trying to impart to those coaches that take play, you know, that take part in your coaches certification. What does that look like?
Yeah, real easy to say, hard to do, but, you know, I got an educational degree and I studied to be a teacher. My mom's, are teachers. I study teachers for a living. I have 19 years of successful teachings. So, you know, I give them what I think a teacher needs. And number one, that's the holistic coach. You know, you train them on the physical aspects of coaching, the mental aspects of coaching, the emotional aspects of coaching, and the spiritual aspects of coaching. And all that, you know, intertwined in that is, I mean, coaching is basically three things. Number one, connection, and, you know, motivation, inspiration. You know, you got to get a buy-in. Number two, getting them to execute. So you got to have unbelievable methods of teaching. And then three, relationships. You know, you praise right, correct wrong. What generation player are you training? Do you want to go old school approach, new school approach, or one school approach in your, you know, the way you build relationships with players? Because I would say relationships trump competency and execution to an extent. Because if the player doesn't trust you, respect you, and nowadays, you know, sometimes they'll leave you or won't listen to you because they don't like you.
Right.
I had a lot of players, pros, a lot of them leave me because they didn't like me, and that's fine. I don't coach. I'm not your friend. That's not the most important thing. I'm here to help your life. I'm here to answer a call. And you know, I'm more of a parent. You know, big brother, tough love. Kind of, but you know, that right there is you know, they got to respect you and trust you, and so relationship building is huge. You know, even because I mean, sometimes you might have in our industry, you might have a kid for 2 days, and
yeah.
So you got to set culture in 2 days, you know, or even 1 day, and so I mean, I've done it, and by the grace of God, I've come into a gym and in 4 hours, I set the culture. Now, are all 140 kids changed or 30 kids? I don't know. But I've gotten messages after messages after messages. You feel in your spirit that, you know, some kids and parents in that gym were changed for life. Because I really believe if you don't feel you can impact a person's life in an hour, you're underselling yourself. I mean, especially if you're a Christian, man, you have what you call the Holy Spirit, a power in you, you know, the universe, if you will. You can change a person's life in an hour. A movie has done that for me in 2 hours. A guy named Austin Lehman did that in a camp talk. Rick Pitino, camp talk. Sean Miller did a camp demonstration. Like, guys have changed my life in an hour. Why can't you change someone else's in an hour?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think you can have huge impact on people. And a lot of times, one of the things that I find interesting is that you don't often know that impact has taken place until years later when somebody remembers, you know, something, or somebody comes back to you and says, hey, do you remember when you said X, Y, or Z, or you did this for me? And that's one of the most satisfying things that I find as a coach, is when a kid comes back to you later after the fact and says, hey, thanks for doing this or saying that. That's what really set me on the right path. And I think you're 100% right on that, Gannon. I want to be respectful of your time and just give you a chance to talk about the two things that you have going online with the grind and your basketball curriculum before we get out of here. So if you could talk to people a little bit about what those two things are all about, and then we'll wrap things up after that.
Yeah, the grind is just a newsletter full of stories, information, typical newsletter that if you're interested in what we do and how we do it, free drills, if you will, email us and we put you on our email. The curriculum is probably my best piece of work. It's 18 years of everything from grassroots to professional training that I've been involved with. It took me a year to make. It's digital. We have PDFs. It flows like a class, so coaches can take it and get certified from it. Players can take it and use it as an educational class. You can get workouts from it. It's a systematic, comprehensive online video curriculum. You can pull it up on your phone. You can get certified after each level. We have basic, intermediate, advanced, and pro. Coaches can get a master certification if they get a master certification, we actually refer them to jobs and send them out on our behalf if we have jobs available that I can't do. We've sent our coaches to about 15 different countries so far. One of them, three of them live in China. Two of them aren't with me anymore, but one of them still works for me, Corey Harris, just as an example of a master trainer. So I enjoy it. It's something that we're adding to every year. It's super, super easy. Mike, I'm not trying to be Eric. Nobody has said anything negative about it. Like, we're trying to get negative feedback. I would say the only thing we need to add is, like, defensive transition drills and some more transition five-man drills, but it's really offensive and defensive, two, one, two, and three-man game drills, you know, individual skills, playing with a teammate, two on two, and then playing out of that triangle, three on three. It's offensive development for any offensive system. Player development, team skill development. It's one of a kind, man. It's awesome.
That's great stuff. I'd recommend to anybody get on there, and you can see that at GannonBakerBasketball.com. It's really good stuff. Gannon, we can't thank you enough for jumping on today. It's been a lot of fun talking hoops with you. Before we leave, if you wouldn't mind once again sharing out your contact information so people can figure out how to reach out to you if they have questions or they want to get involved with any of the things you have going on.
Yeah, thank you. Website is GannonBakerBasketball.com, GannonBaker, basketball.com. Email is Gannon@GannonBakerBasketball.com. Facebook is Gannon_Baker_. I'm on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, not on Snapchat, but my kids tell me I'm not cool, so we might do that. used to be on MySpace, but I don't think there's any space for it anymore, so I'm trying to get my lingo together with social media. It's not something that I really spend a lot of time in, but my business team does, and looks like they're growing it by the day, so it's easy to get in touch with me. I always welcome life or basketball questions, and I promise I'll get back to you within 48 hours, and we're excited to keep going, man. Thanks, Mike.
Yeah, absolutely. Gannon, we can't thank you enough for jumping on with us. It's been a pleasure. And to everyone out there, we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Head Start Basketball's Player Development Academy offers Cleveland-area players a unique opportunity to improve their basketball skills. Regardless of a player's age, skill level, or position, training with Head Start Basketball will elevate your game to the next level. Do you want to improve your ball handling, become a better shooter, or develop into a more skilled, confident player? Our academy classes offer training that's designed to do just that. Our training sessions are innovative and will have you learning skills that are transferable to actual games. We have four different class skill levels for boys and girls, ages 4 and up. All Player Development Academy classes will be held at the Strongsville Recreation Center. For more information or to get registered, please visit www.strongsville.com.
www.headstartbasketball.com.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.